Welcome to the Chat with Father Matt. Every week we'll chat about the faith with various people. We plan to keep the show light and interesting, and we'll even sometimes get off topic, but we'll always try to be a beacon of light. If you have a subject you'd like to discuss on the show, just send us an email at vicar@fortrecoverycatholics.org or Facebook at Fort Recovery Catholic Cluster. Welcome back to the Chat with Father Matt. I'm here today with Father Jason Williams. He was on here one time before. He's stationed down in the east side region of St. Cecilia's, St. Anthony, St. John, and St. Margaret Cortona. Is that correct?
That's mostly correct.
Uh-oh.
What? It's St. Margaret, St. John.
St. Margaret, St. John. Oh, sorry, St. Margaret. You're ahead of St. John. My apologies.
It'll be all right. It's good. They're good people.
So. There you go. Good. So we planned to have this ahead of time to schedule this date. I think it was 3 weeks ahead because I was going to head to Rome.
Oh, yeah.
And you said we could work out on this date. But we didn't really pick a topic. And now we're here to chat and we're like, oh, no, what should we talk about? But it seems like people are pretty interested in my trip to Rome. And from what I hear, your group, or your parish is going to do a pilgrimage to Rome sometime?
We are. Father Jamie is hosting a 2-week pilgrimage in November to Rome. So.
Oh, great. And you lived in Rome.
I did. I studied philosophy over there, so I was there for 2 years.
Wow. So you might have a little bit more insight than us, but studying is probably a little bit different than pilgrimaging and vacationing over in Rome.
Yeah, a little bit.
There you go.
We got to we saw our fair share of things while we were over there, but it was a little bit different experience because it was in religious life as well. So we had our whole cloister community life going on at the same time. But it was fun. It was good. We got to see different things. And you're there in the heart of the church, right? So
sure. Did you actually get to meet the Pope? Or
I did not meet the Pope.
Did you ever see the Pope?
Well, we did. We saw the Pope pretty frequently. So it was good. It was Pope Benedict at the time. So it was... few years ago, but it was a very good experience.
Sure. So the Pope usually shows up at the Sunday Angelus at noon, and then he has what's called the Wednesday audience. Is there other times that the Pope, you know, is more accessible when we're in Rome?
Those are kind of the big things, but then there are like the little things that just happen like randomly that you'll just kind of end up and it's like, hey, look, the Pope's there.
Hmm.
So for example, they do a candlelight procession praying the rosary through the Vatican Gardens on May 31st for the Feast of the Visitation.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And there was a group of us that went to that one year. And like when we got to the end, this car showed up and the Pope got out and just gave a talk to everybody. So it was pretty cool. So there are times we just kind of run into him and maybe not expecting it as much as other times.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, I think... Whenever you go on a pilgrimage, whenever you go on an overseas trip, you kind of have all these plans set out for you, and you should just realize something's going to go wrong. I mean, or something good is going to happen. I shouldn't say go wrong. like, you know, having that vigil and then the Pope showing up, that's a pretty cool thing. But I guess I had plans, but I didn't necessarily have to-the-minute plans to kind of fulfill every single little place that we could ever go to in Rome. We kind of just took it at our own pace and had a little siesta some days because we were tired, but then we just went back out and checked out more churches. And some churches...
When in Rome, do as the Romans, right?
That's true, right. I mean, I don't drink coffee much, but I had cappuccino every single day with my little pastry or cornetto. No bacon and eggs, really, when you're hanging out in Rome. I mean, there were some places advertised the American breakfast, but when you're in Rome, might as well just do what the Romans do.
It's usually better.
It's true. It's true. I usually drink beer and bourbon, and I pretty much drink wine the whole time because why would you drink the inferior stuff when they really prize themselves in having good wine? And even the house wine, they compete to see who has the best house wine in the
restaurants. I've got a good story about house wine in Rome.
Yeah?
Yeah, so when I was in the Navy, before I had gone to Rome the first time, there was a priest who would take a pilgrimage to Rome every year, and he was telling us when we told him that a group of us from the Navy was going to go visit Rome for about a week or so, he said, oh, let me tell you about Rome Pilgrimage number 12. There's a whole series of events with this one particular pilgrim that was in the group. And he said the best part was toward the end of the trip, all of them are in a restaurant. They're having like the closing pilgrimage dinner. It's a nice restaurant. And the waiter comes over and asks if anybody would want any wine. And everybody says, oh, yeah, just give us a carafe of the house red and a carafe of the house white and da 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 da. Just give all the house wine. Because they're good over there. Like they're very good. And, but the one woman says, no, I need a wine list. And everybody's just like, what? What? No, just get the house. The house wines are fantastic. Mm-hmm. And, so they get into this whole argument about all this stuff, and she ends up just like getting all frustrated and just says, I only drink imported wines. So then they bring her a wine list, and she orders some wine from New York while she's in Rome and can't figure out why everybody else is so excited about their house wine that's really good while she's begrudgingly drinking this wine from New York. So you're absolutely right. House wines are fantastic.
Wow, man. You just can't be stuck in your ways. I mean, the Italians, they have a certain way of doing things. It's just kind of crazy. And there's no necessarily explanation of what they do, but they just do it. Like, we were in the Sistine Chapel, and it's pretty loud because there's a lot of people in there. People are taking photos and videos, and there's signs that clearly say silence. No photos, no videos. So the guards in there were just kind of walking around and seeing people that are pulling out their cell phones and cameras, like, no photos. They're like yelling louder than the people are actually in the Sistine Chapel. And they're yelling, silence, no photos, no videos. And then people who are next to me are saying, man, these people must really hate their job so much that they're just getting so angry. And I'm like, no, the Italians, they don't really care what kind of ruckus they cause. They just want to make sure that you're obeying the rules. So if they have to be louder and do more outlandish things to get you to do the rules, they're more than willing to do it. But it just doesn't make sense because the ruckus was way more than what was being going on in the actual Sistine Chapel.
That reminds me of, I was at, I think it was during this first trip to Rome back in 2002 that I was at a candlelight service inside St. Peter's this time for, I think it was the Vigil of Our Lady of Lourdes. And there were all these people around us are all have like the little kind of like Easter Vigil type candles. And the one woman in front of us lit the woman in front of her's hair on fire. And all of these Italian women just start screaming and like, put out the fire, put out the fire, in the middle of St. Peter's while everybody else is trying to pray. But it's just like you're saying.
Right.
They don't care what ruckus they cause. They just need to get their thing done. And that's all that matters. I mean, it smelled like burnt hair for the rest of the evening.
But that is the worst smell in the world. But, you know, the Italians, they're the way they drive, like, they don't really pay attention to the streetlights. They don't really have stop signs. Lanes are kind of, you know, I guess a thought, but they don't really actually, they're not actually there. It's like people just kind of merge into traffic, and then these scooters just zoom past in the between the lanes of the cars. I kind of like compare it to dancing. Like, each party needs to know how to actually dance for the dance to actually go well. So for the Italians, I guess each person just needs to be super aware of everywhere they're at and just have their foot on the gas and on the brake at the same time and just stop and go as soon as they see an opening or a pedestrian walking through. I know my parents had to get used to just like walking in front of traffic basically during crosswalks because you didn't know if they were going to stop or not, but sure enough, they just stopped right on a dime when we crossed through whatever crosswalk we had to go to.
Nine times out of ten.
Yeah, and they say that there's not as many accidents in Italy compared there is to there in the U.S. when we have all these kind of moderated big laws that everyone pays attention to, and I don't know, it just kind of blows my mind. And ordering food, like, we wanted to order pizza just for an appetizer, and they're like, no, that's an entree. You can only have it as an entree. So basically, they convinced us to order this like mixto plate, which was just ham and cheese and all these kind of wonderful things with focaccia bread on the side. So basically, we had our pizza. It just was separated because you couldn't possibly put those together as an appetizer. It doesn't make sense to me at all, but you do what the Italians do. I'm glad that the Italians kind of converted my parents to not necessarily just drink sweet wine that they get in these parts of Ohio, but they actually really appreciated the wine that they had at every single stop and every restaurant we went to. So
nice.
Seems like we're talking
about... You can learn a lot going to a place like that. So
that's true. Good. This is true. But it seems like we're talking a lot about like the culture of Italy, but we should probably talk a little bit about, you know, the pilgrimage or the excitement that Rome presents to us through its churches and through its history.
There's definitely a lot there, so...
That is for sure. So I kind of just decided to do two places to visit, Assisi in Italy and the Metropolitan of Rome. Assisi is where St. Francis and St. Clare both started their religious orders, the OFMs and the Poor Clares. The TORs basically came a little bit later. Actually, I guess I should say what those terms are. OFM is Order of Friars Minor, and TOR stands for Third Order Regular. And then the second order is the Poor Clares that pretty much are in cloistered living throughout the world. And I think our Archdiocese of Cincinnati has a group of Poor Clare nuns in Cincinnati. Do you know if that's correct,
yes.
Jason?
Yeah. Somewhere. I've heard that they exist, but they're cloistered, so they're there praying for us, which is great.
Exactly.
And that's what they do. It's awesome.
So, yeah, we show up, I think, late in the evening. We go into our apartment, and we can see the Basilica of St. Francis shining from our window. And I was like, man, this is just going to be a great pilgrimage. I didn't have no idea what kind of apartment I picked. I just knew it was going to be in the upper part of Assisi, and I can see the Basilica of St. Francis outside. Unfortunately, I didn't get to say Mass there because we had a little bit of delay with the flights, but I guess that kind of made up for it with actually seeing it outside my window as I experienced Assisi.
It's a beautiful basilica. They say that if St. Francis had known about it, he would have never let it have been built.
Sure. Yeah.
Too big for him, but I think he deserves it. He did a lot of good, and it's a good testimony to the good the Franciscans have done, too. So,
I mean, he pretty much instantly became a saint. Just a couple years after he was named, after he died, he was named a saint. And all the great architects and all the great artists of the age wanted to build and paint a beautiful basilica in honor of St. Francis. So it just shows how much he was loved in that area.
Now, you mentioned the upper city of Assisi.
Yeah.
Is that from the lower city of Assisi, or what's the deal there?
So, yeah. So, there, I guess the medieval city is on top of a hill, because back then, you didn't want people to raid your city, so you built walls around your city, and you're on basically on top of a mountain to kind of prevent raiders from coming in. So, you could see the city walls still there today, and you could walk in and out of them. I don't think they ever closed them anymore. But
oh man, I had to pay to go in them the last time I was there.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know, it was like €10 or something like that. But my dad and my brothers and I, we just walked all the way through the inside of the walls. So.
And Assisi up on the top of the mount.
Yeah, and I like to go through the walls, but like to walk inside of the walls.
Oh, inside. Yeah, because they're super thick, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess they had soldiers on guard so they could, I guess, shoot. Did they have cannons back then? Probably not in the 1200s.
Probably bow and arrow
or something, yeah, just to kind of prevent there. So anyway, in the top part of Assisi, the medieval part of the city, we have St. Clare's, where she is buried. Well, not necessarily buried, but where her body is, so everyone can see her bones. We have San Rufino, we have the San Damiano Cross, we have the San Damiano Monastery. I was able to celebrate Mass at the tomb of St. Clare, which just was an amazing experience. I've been to Assisi a couple of times, been to Rome a couple of times, but never was able to celebrate Mass. So just really, really exciting to be able to have that prayer time at these sites. You kind of get, picture happy, and you just kind of like go from place to place to place, and you just want to try to take in as much as you can very quickly. But the time to like stop and pray, I think, is a really, really essential thing as you make your pilgrimage throughout the cities and the sites.
What's the so that's a great point. Mm-hmm. Just because it is, especially today with cell phones and all that stuff, you can just spend a whole pilgrimage just taking pictures. Mm-hmm. But be able to have that focus of that spiritual dimension to mm-hmm. it. Hey, this is a great opportunity to. There are special graces that God has prepared for those who go on pilgrimage. He knows what they are. We don't necessarily know what he has prepared for us, but they're definitely there. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you're kind of able to live out that kind of anticipation and that eagerness to receive those graces, and that it really paid off.
Oh, very much so. I mean, everyone was in my prayers, and I prayed for myself too, to be that priest that the Lord has called me to be. To anyone that I encounter, whether in my assignment or in my future assignments as I go forward from this pilgrimage. Because Francis and Claire were such great examples for us to kind of come out of ourselves, you know, hug the leper, just beg and just depend on God's providence throughout their whole life.
Yeah, just that, I mean, that complete and utter trust in God, so yeah. Which is definitely something we need to, I don't know, follow their example for today, because it's so easy to depend on ourselves.
Amen to that. So we walked around the whole day, had a great time, had some beautiful views of the valley as we ate our meals. I think we maybe visited 5 or 6 churches that day. Went to sleep, woke up really early the next morning, and we drove down to, we took a taxi down to the lower part of Assisi, where Francis, I guess, had his little camp out, or I guess was exiled from Assisi itself because he was living this new radical life, but also he felt called by the Lord to rebuild his church. And Francis thought, literally, he had to rebuild a church. So he actually found a church that was kind of in ruins and was there working on this little small church and actually rebuilt it himself. And it's now called the Port Tiuncula. I'm not sure if it was called that in the past, but that church is still standing, but it is surrounded by this huge basilica called Our Lady of the Angels.
So it's like it's the little church inside of the big church, right?
Correct, yeah. I mean, sure, you can Google it and just type in the Basilica of the Angels in Assisi, and you'll see this little tiny church there. So Francis actually built there. That was kind of like his little hot spot. He actually died in that church. And I think it was maybe 10, 15 feet away from there, he was laying, dying. They even have a little inscription saying that he was naked, lying down on the bare, cold floor, waiting for his maker to take him home. So, just, I don't know, just complete selflessness, just waiting for the Lord to be there for him. Just didn't want anything material of this earth before he was ready to go home to our Lord. I don't know if anyone could necessarily do that today.
They'd have everything stripped away except for their cell phone.
Right. So. Well. So I actually got to celebrate Mass inside that little small chapel. It's kind of hard to do. There's like 3 time slots in the whole church that you can celebrate Mass. And the Port Tiuncula is only 2 of those slots. So there can't be multiple Masses going on. So they let me celebrate there at 7:30 in the morning. And I thought it was just going to be me and my parents. But then there's all these pilgrims that were there waiting for us. I think they're all in all Italians. I had my Mass in English, but it didn't matter. I said the prayers and they responded in Italian. It was kind of a cool experience to go
That's
there.
That's kind of neat.
I also had a little...
Those sorts of things really... key you into the universality of the church, that we're all in this together, mm-hmm. that those things don't have to kind of separate us. That's pretty awesome.
Sure. And the little nun that was like getting me ready, she only spoke Italian, so we had to kind of like do hand motions and stuff to kind of figure out what I actually had to do. I kept on following her around, and she basically took me and sat me into a chair, and she said, "Firma," which means sit or stand or just stay put. And then she basically told me when I need to go out for Mass itself.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So Assisi was a very cool, chill place. And then you go into Rome. it's a big city. I mean, it's dirty. There's garbage. There's lots of graffiti, pickpocketers.
Very I mean,
CC. Yeah, so different than Assisi. But yet Rome contains all of these beautiful treasures of our church. You wouldn't think that at all when you first glance at it with all the homeless and all, I guess, the garbage that was around. I mean, it wasn't horrible like India or anything like that, but it was dirty.
It's just a big city, yeah, with all the big city problems. So,
and everyone kind of depends on like the socialist government to take care of everything. No one really does anything on their own initiative. The government has to just takes care of it all. So no one, I guess that is socialist, right? Or
sure, I mean, more or less.
I don't know. I mean, we're not socialists here, but it seems like we depend on the government more and more. But hopefully, we don't come to that that really. Dependent on that's the government true. And not dependent on the people.
Said, in the midst of all of that, there's still so much. It is the heart of the church. That's mm-hmm. It was the same way when Peter went there and sure. Paul. Like I'm sure that they were dealing with all the problems of society of that time, just like right. We still do with ours. But and yet, the, like you're saying, just the church is in the midst of that. So. Right.
I mean, St. Lawrence, who was grilled at the stake, they asked him for the treasures of the church, and he basically brought all the poor to him and said, "This is the treasures of the church." And they're
that's
like,
right.
we're not buying that at all, so you're going to be grilled.
Yeah, it's still true, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, very much so, yeah. It's beautiful. So, I mean, there's four major spots in Rome that you have to get to. That's St. Peter's, St. Mary Major, St. John Lateran, and St. Paul outside the walls. And they're known as... Go ahead.
Which one of those four is the Pope's Cathedral?
That's a good question. Yeah, everyone thinks that St. Peter's is, but it's really St. John Lateran. The cathedra, which basically is a chair that the Pope kind of sits for his diocese, is at St. John Lateran.
Which is actually a lot smaller than St. Peter's, right?
It is.
It's bigger than most churches here, but it is smaller than St. Peter's for sure.
It is amazing because I've been to Rome a couple of times, and when my first trip there, these churches just seemed to go on forever and were so huge, but now that you kind of experienced them a couple of times, they don't seem as big. I mean, they're still huge. Like, you still it takes your breath away with all the architecture and the beautiful art, but it's kind of amazing how you just kind of get used to the grandeur that is there. I don't know. I thought I would kind of just be blown away every single time I entered into there. I mean, St. Peter's still blown away because it's just football fields long, multiple football fields long. But
which of those four do you have a favorite one?
It would be a toss up between St. Paul outside the walls and St. Peter's Basilica.
I love St. Paul outside the walls mm-hmm. just because since it is a little further out, mm-hmm. I always found it like a little quieter. You could appreciate it more because it wasn't quite as busy with people.
That's yeah.
And it's a neat place. It's got all those mosaics of the popes up there. Mm-hmm. On the every pope since St. Peter has a mosaic near the ceiling around the edges of the building. I love that church.
Yeah, and they made a big deal that Pope Francis took the last spot, and so they think that there's going to be no popes after that. So then they made a big deal to just carve out some room so there'd be more spots.
I thought they put in more spots.
They did.
No, oh, he's the last one. It's going to be the end of the world.
Very basically, yeah. But now that they added more spots, I guess people are calmed down a little bit. But, I mean, yeah. I don't know. Our architecture, our things can maybe tell us some things that are going on in our world. And only so much time is set aside for us to be here on Earth. But
that's good. Yeah.
Is that because the paintings are going to tell us that or not? Who knows?
Maybe not, but it's at least a reminder for
sure.
Someday it's going to end.
Very much so. So you're able to see St. Paul's chains and his bones a little bit more easily at St. Paul outside the walls than you would for St. Peter's bones. They're kind of kept in a more secret place, which I was actually blessed to go and say Mass at. It's called the Saint
Clementine Altar.
The Clementine Altar.
Oh man,
I'm pretty sure everyone's seen the huge Balticino, which is that big roof thing that's covering the main altar. When you look at Saint Peter's, there's a crypt that you go underneath, and there's maybe 15 chapels that are underneath there, but the San Clementine Chapel actually contains St. Peter's bones, and I was able to say Mass there. Thanks to...
Grace, I'm slightly jealous of you, Father Matt. So.
Well, when you get to Rome, Father Dan Hess will also hook you up.
All right,
I pray that happens. I mean, it seems like it's difficult to get, but when it's available, they're more than willing to allow priests to celebrate Mass there.
Wow.
What other places? I got to celebrate Mass multiple times in St. Peter's because basically we're 15 minutes away. It's kind of hard to reserve chapels if you don't really know Italian because they don't really have forms online to kind of prepare in advance. Assisi was a little bit easier because they just had forms you could fill out. But it's cool. How cool is it to say that you just came to St. Peter's, waited at 7 o'clock in the morning, ran to the sacristy. They basically put the chasuble on you and they hand you a chalice and then you can just go and find an altar and celebrate Mass. I mean, as Father Dan Hess called it, it's altar roulette. So you can get some really cool places to say Mass. St. Gregory the Great's there. John Paul II is there. John the 23rd. St. Leo the Great. Just so many different altars you can say Mass by the bodies of the popes.
That's pretty incredible.
So on our way to Mary Major, we kind of just stumbled upon this one church that was set back on the road a little bit, and it was about to close, but there was just 9th century mosaics just all over. I can't remember the name of the church, but we found the pillar where Jesus was flogged, and it's just kind of crazy to go into these churches.
That might be St. Praxedes or St. Pudens.
It was right close to Mary Major. I mean, it was pretty amazing.
Right. There's two churches there. One of those two has the pillar, and the other has a table that they think St. Peter actually used as an altar when he first got to Rome. So there's, and like you're saying, there's tiny little churches like tucked away. They've got these amazing things on them.
So. And they don't look like much on the outside. And then you walk inside and there's just this beautiful architecture. Cardinals buried there and just all these different relics from Jerusalem. At Mary Major, there's a piece of the wood of the Christ manger. I mean, it's just crazy how what you stumble upon. We walked down the main road from St. Peter's. My mom's a Carmelite, and we saw a church, so we just walked in, and there's just this beautiful Our Lady of Mount Carmel statue, all in gold. And so that just really brought a big smile to my mom. She really enjoyed there to pray for all her Carmelite, I guess, brothers and sisters, because she's in the lay Carmelite there.
See, there you go. That's one of those special graces that God has prepared that you don't even know about.
Right.
So.
Exactly. I mean, and then you can just bask in the beauty of that church.
Did you go to St. Clement? It's near the Colosseum.
We did go to St. Clement. Yes, we did. And
that is one of my favorite spots in Rome because you can see all of the history of the different eons or whatever you call it, eras of Rome.
Yeah.
It's what? It's I think it's a 13th century basilica.
Uh-huh.
So it already sits like 10, 15 feet below street level.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you go inside, you pay your 5-euro fee to get a ticket, and then you can go downstairs, and under the 13th century basilica is a 6th century basilica, which at one point Saints Cyril and Methodius were buried there.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think that we've given them back to the Eastern Church.
Yeah, but there's
and then,
definitely
you can go
some
down another layer. And it's like a first century
pagan temple.
A pagan temple, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just all these different layers of the history of that city are in one spot right there that's very easy to see. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, and they only started digging that up in the late 19th century, I think it was.
Right,
it was 1850s or something like that. But that history was all underneath there long before that. And they said there was a house connected to this pagan temple, so you can see like how people in the first century Rome lived. And there was a natural spring that was connected to the house and then was still running to this day. Just
right.
Kind of amazing to hear, think about water running from the area for over 2,000 years.
It is pretty nice. I mean, that's a long time. So.
And that church was featured on Father Bishop Barron's Catholicism series, because the crucifix looks like a vine at the bottom, and it just kind of branches out and gives life to every part of the world in this picture. There's like there's little tiny characters that are in there, and every aspect of life is kind of going on, and Christ is a part of every aspect of our life. That was just really cool.
Yeah, it's the big like the Tree of Life mosaic.
Yeah.
Is what they,
yeah. Oh, is that like what it's called? Okay. Yeah.
Something like that. We can call it that. We'll start a thing. So.
Sure. There you go. It's super awesome. And I got to meet some people that I've known from the past in the seminary. Shane Houston from the Diocese of Tulsa does pre-theology at Mount St. Mary's, and now he's in Rome. Andrew Lesko for the U.S. Virgin Islands. He does pre-theology also at Mount St. Mary's, and now he's studying in Rome. Father Dan Hess, who I mentioned a couple of times already, he's doing his graduate studies in systematic theology so he can teach at our seminary. So I'm a big fan of podcasts, and I actually got to meet one of my favorite podcasters, the Catholic Stuff You Should Know guys. There's four priests that do it, but Father John Nepple was kind enough to come to dinner with me and Father Dan Hess, and we chatted about priestly life and how us as priests can live in fraternity and just kind of lift ourselves up so we can be better priests for all the people that we serve. So that was just a really blessed time to hang out in Rome.
Is he studying over there too? Or?
He is. I think he's also studying ecclesiology, which is the study of the church. And I think he's almost done. So he'll come back to the Diocese of Denver to help. I guess he'll teach there, but I know some other dioceses, they don't necessarily just send guys away to teach. They just want their presbyterate to know more about their faith so they can give talks and conferences to their diocese.
That's always a good thing. So, and just having that, those keeping up those relationships, like you were saying, mm-hmm. just a great blessing. So.
So I guess the last thing that was kind of on my list, I mean, just millions of beautiful churches. You almost become church tired as you go. I threw my coin in the Trevi Fountain. I had gelato like every single day. It was just like, you know, there was a system that you had to do as you go through the time in Rome. But before I went to Rome, I wrote the prefect of the papal household telling them I was a first year priest. I told them that my parents never been to Europe before. This is the first time in Rome. And I would love if they would give us some special tickets for the Wednesday papal audience. So 2 months went by after I mailed this letter. I was like, I'm not going to get an answer, but I guess Rome is kind of slow. I receive a letter in the mail and says, I wish to grant you your request. You will be able to join our Holy Father and his Wednesday audience in the special section. So we pick up these tickets, nice. And we basically sat like 20 feet away from where the Pope proclaimed his papal audience. Just
wow, way up there on top,
way
right?
Way up on top, yeah. The same level as the Pope outside St. Peter's Square. Just,
I'm pretty sure that means that you're going to be a Pope someday.
Oh, man, don't say that at all. It's tough enough being a priest, man, right?
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. But you get to see the emotion of the Holy Father because they always like him to just read off script, but Pope Francis definitely just kind of goes off script at times and just... I don't know. Gets those hand motions going because he's born of two Italian family, our parents, even though he's from Argentina, and just really wanted us to kind of like get into what he was speaking to us, even though we didn't understand it. It was in Italian, but you just kind of felt the love that he wanted to promote to us.
That's pretty neat.
So the Popemobile, it seemed like they drove it faster than I remember last time I was there. He was like just whizzing all over the place and just waving at people and just going crazy, and then told them to stop sometimes so he can pick up a baby and kiss them. and then it's just, yeah, basically if you had a baby by you, you knew that you're going to kind of be close to the Pope because he would stop and kind of hug and kiss all those babies. After the audience, he just kind of ran back down to the main section of St. Peter's and was just like shaking all kinds of hands. There must have been a huge Argentine contingent there because he just spent a ton of time up there with the Argentines. But then he came back up and visited all the sick who were right in front of my parents. And he spent some good time just like praying with the people that were sick and talking to them. They were giving them lots and lots of gifts. There's a special tradition that if you buy a zucchetto, which is the white skull cap that the Pope wears, you can ask him to switch skull caps. And fortunately, I saw two people do that right before I had the skull cap in my hand. So I felt like I was pretty, you know, pumped to get that skull cap taken from him. But I couldn't actually reach him myself because there was this barricade and then these sick people and then him. So we were maybe like 7 feet apart. So I kept on yelling in my best Italian, "Permiso, permiso," and then waving my zucchetto to the guy. So the usher finally took it from me and then gave it to the Pope. So I have a couple of pictures of him taking the zucchetto, placing mine on his head and taking his off and then handing it back to me. So besides celebrating Mass in Rome, that was definitely the most exciting part of my trip, to receive an actual article of clothing that the Pope wore. And hopefully,
so you have that framed somewhere, or are you wearing it right now?
Well, I will not say the person's name, but I did have a friend who is in seminary that says, "I'm trying this on," and he tried it on. But it's just sitting in my room right now, but I'm hoping to put it on display with the pictures that I took so everyone can kind of see this lovely article that we have. It's kind of crazy what... Because I had it in my hand the day before because I bought it, and you don't think anything of it because it's just, what, a piece of cloth. But once it like goes on to someone really famous, the leader of our church, it just becomes this just, you know, prize that you've kind of won as you traveled through Rome.
It's a pretty good souvenir there. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've kind of gone a little long, but it was just a wonderful trip, and I'm really glad that I was able to take my parents and go there. So I really encourage anyone out there who is thinking about going to Rome and making that pilgrimage to do it. If it's happening in your area, sign up, take that trip. There's some really good tour guides out there, so probably really good priests that will have awesome masses for you as you go.
It is definitely worth it. So
for sure.
I would highly encourage it as well.
I don't know if I could live there necessarily like Father Jason did, but I really enjoy my 10 days that I spent in Rome.
Even if you're there for a few years, you don't get to see everything there is.
There you go. Yeah, so
take advantage of the time you have.
Opportunity to go back again. There's never exhausted, for sure. So I want to thank you all for listening today. Again, I want to thank Father Jason for joining me on the chat with Father Matt. If you have a subject that you'd like me to discuss with my fellow clergy and friends, feel free to email me at vicar@fortrecoverycatholics.org or message me on Facebook at Fort Recovery Catholic Cluster. This is on iTunes now, so if you listened to this and enjoyed this program, please rate us on iTunes so we can have other people learn about this program. Thanks again for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week for the chat with Father Matt.